Chapter 12. Where are the damned dragons? The goblin shaman wisely ducked away into the company of others of its kind at the sight of the great Tiago. The drow was in a foul mood this day, storming around the camp of the Many Arrows minions besieging the city of Silvery Moon. He had drawn the orc leaders together around a large fire, and made no secret of his displeasure as he dressed them down. The goblin wasn't well versed in the orc language, but his skills had improved enough, and it really wasn't that much different from the goblin tongue anyway, so that he could make out the gist of the dark elf's rant. They hadn't pressured Silvery Moon enough, apparently. The city was too intact. The defenders should be reeling, short on food and without morale. It sounded rather silly to the goblin shaman, who knew well that the wizards and priests within the magical city had easily enough fed the citizenry with conjured food and drink. This drow was flailing in anger, nothing more. After the tirade died down, however, Tiago selected a few of the orc leaders and herded them into a tent, setting many guards, giants mostly, to keep the perimeter wide. The goblin shaman milled around with the horde, easing his way to a cubby behind some stacked crates. He took a deep breath, trying to still his nerves. He didn't like dealing with the drow in this manner. He could fool the orcs and goblins, and surely the ogres easily enough, and evoke no more than a curious glance from a giant. But a dark elf might see right through him. But so be it, he silently told himself, and he fished the small potion vial from his belt and imbibed it. He waited a moment for the effects to take place, then moved out as silently as he could, cutting as direct a course for the command tent as possible. He might be heard, but he wouldn't be seen. The potion was one of invisibility. He veered from the tent flap and the two wary giant guards, and instead made his way to the side. He pressed his ear against the skin, hoping he might catch the conversation within, but to no avail. He had to go in, and so he did, easing himself under the tent flap. Good luck was with him, and he slipped in near some casks and crates at the side of the wide tent. He quickly eased behind them, all the while fearing that a drow noble might detect his presence, invisible or not. He quieted his breathing and listened, and learned. Tiago's entourage left the encampment soon after, and his invisibility long worn away, so did the goblin shaman, abandoning his watchpost to run off in the dark of night to a particular copse of trees and a particular stump of a felled tree within. He glanced around, making sure he wasn't seen, then reached carefully into a crack in the trunk, releasing a cleverly hidden lever. The flat top of the trunk popped free on one side, and the goblin lifted the secret trap door back on its hinges and quickly scrambled onto the ladder within, closing and sealing the trunk behind him. Down he went to a small anteroom, where he stood with his arms extended unthreateningly, well aware that several crossbows and a side-slinger catapult or two were aimed his way. He tapped his beret and was Regis once more.
"Well met, little rat," said Gunner Grapeshot,
the artillery dwarf commander in charge of this secret tunnel and trapdoor the industrious folk of Silvery Moon had dug.
"What do ye know?"
"Lots,"
Regis replied, hustling by.
"Lots for Lord Hornblade and the Knight Commanders."
Gunner Grapeshot clapped him on the shoulder as he sped past.
"Where are the damned dragons?" Tiago roared at Ravel. They were back in Hartusk Keep, the ruins of Sundabar, and the drow warrior was not in a good mood.
"Arothiter said he would return in the melting," the Zorlaran wizard replied. "That time is upon us. Patience, my friend.
Patience?"
Tiago interrupted with incredulity and animosity.
"The Baenri and Barrison Delarmgo soldiers are gone. You tell me to have patience while the matron mother has none, clearly."
"Beware your words, husband," said Sarabel, entering the room.
"We were winning,"
Tiago replied in low and even tones.
"We still are," Ravel replied. "The dwarves are in their holes, Silvery Moon is locked, Sundabar and Nesme have fallen, and Warlord Hartusk's army only swells with new monsters eager to drink in the blood of our enemies."
"The dwarves,"
Tiago spat.
Do you think we'll keep them in their holes when they realize that few drow support the orcs in the tunnels?
What does it matter?
Sarabel asked sharply, drawing Tiago's narrow-eyed glance. Most would wilt in the face of that dangerous look, but Sarabel stood taller.
15-10 days, and the hourglass sand is already falling fast. We will strike again, beautifully and powerfully, and leave the mark of House Oerden burned forever upon the memories of those survivors in the Silver Marches. And then we will be gone, back home to House Oerden in Menzo Berenzon, to revel in the glory of victory.
Ravel nodded with her every word, but Tiago seemed less than convinced.
So hungry for glory,
Sarabel berated him with her wicked grin unrelenting.
And too foolish to know that greater glory awaits us in our homeland. We are the instruments of the matron mother, idiot husband. We will carry House Oerden forward, step by step, until we and Great Bayenry surround matron mother Delarmgo on the ruling council.
Third house? Tiago asked, his voice full of doubt, for indeed, those houses between Barris and Delarmgo and Oerden were quite capable and powerful. Tiago ran the list silently in his thoughts, trying to sort out which house might be a likely target for House Oerden's attempted climb. Despite trying to keep his thoughts private, he found himself shaking his head. Every house above Oerden was formidable, and none were without powerful allies. For all her bravado, for all she had already done to assert her dominance, Tiago couldn't see Matron Mother Quenthel taking so great a risk as to go to war beside Oerden against any of the other noble houses. Perhaps the Matron Mother would allow the houses Malern and Vandry to finally destroy House Fay Branch, now that the Matron Mother had extracted Manolan Fay to serve in House Bayenry. Perhaps soon after, Bayenry and her allies would turn upon the Malarney and their Vandry allies, eliminating those two houses too from the ruling council. By the time the blood dried, the 5th, 6th, and 7th houses of Menzo Berenzon might well be no more, allowing the fast ascent of Matron Mother Quenthel's pet House of Oerden. Soon after, Tiago whispered with a derisive snort. He had experienced enough of Menzo Berenzon's politics to know that such maneuvers would take years, decades even, and all of that with Matron Mother Mez Barris Armgo wearing her dangerous scowl. He shook his head. He could see none of it, not any time soon. Matron Mother Quenthel had already extended herself to the limits of tolerance between usurping the 8th house with her Oerden creation and granting a 9th seat on the ruling council to her sister Sosumtu. All of Menzo Berenzon, and even the Cusor Lauren soldiers serving here in the Silver Marches, whispered at the brash moves by Matron Mother Quenthel. Only the threat of house wars and a web of powerful allies were keeping the city from exploding into an all-out civil war. The threat of war could often be a greater shackle than the war itself. And even if Sarabel's hopes began to materialize, and House Oerden began her ascent up the rungs of the ruling council, what did that matter to Tiago? He was a Bayenry by blood and birthright, and that house would ever rule supreme in Menzo Berenzon, and surely over House Oerden, which was no more than a shadow cast by the matron mother for her own advantage.
But of course you have other plans, do you not, husband?
Sarabel accused with a wicked grin.
It is not about Menzo Berenzon for you, is it? Or about the glory of House Bayenry or House Oerden, or about the structure and security of Cusor Lauren?
Why would I care for Cusor Lauren? He asked dismissively.
It is my
was, Tiago pointedly interrupted. Sarabel conceded the point with a nod, but that knowing wicked grin never left her face.
"This is all," she said, lifting her arms to take in the environment around her. "About Tiago to you. It is personal, intensely so. It is about the glory of Tiago, and of those gains you can make here to further your personal power in Menzo Berenzon."
"Are you any different, Matron Mother Oerden?" Tiago asked, sarcastically throwing Sarabel's own ambitions to rule House Oerden back in her face.
"No," she admitted. "But I I see the gains of this war already achieved. Few drow have fallen, though many enemies are dead, and Warlord Hartusk is entrenched enough to cause havoc and misery to Lorwar for decades to come. And all in the name of Doerden. We have already won, husband.
Almost, said Tiago. 15 10 days, Ravel said from the side. 150 days to coax the rogue from the dwarven hole and kill him.
And so I shall, Tiago vowed.
The room's door banged open, and in strode Warlord Hartusk with determined, powerful strides.
Where are the dragons? The brutish orc demanded.
A question I just asked, said Tiago.
The melting has begun,
Hartusk growled, using the nickname of the fourth month.
It is time, but we need the dragons.
We have thousands of soldiers, said Ravel. Tens of thousands. We can press Silvery Moon and assail Everlund even without—
Hartusk's growl, so full of anger and threat, cut him short.
The dwarves came out, he said.
Which dwarves?
Tiago and Ravel asked together, both clearly surprised and intrigued.
Mithril Hall,
Hartusk explained.
They burst from their door, then ran back in before my armies could swarm over them. But they stole supplies, many supplies, and so they are safe in their hole once more. I need dragons to keep them in, and to dig into their holes that orc spears will find dwarven hearts.
Tiago smiled knowingly and nodded.
Everlund,
Warlord Hartusk demanded. And Tiago smiled all the wider, pleased that the orc leader was perceptive enough to understand that Tiago doubted their intended course. If the dwarves were breaking out behind them, prodding farther to the south would be foolhardy.
Erothiter said he would return, and so he shall, Sarabel put in.
Warlord Hartusk stared at her for a few moments, then snapped his glare onto Tiago. With a growl and a great harumph, the brutish orc strode from the room, slamming the door behind him.
He doesn't even know yet,
Tiago remarked, referring to the recall of the Menzo Berenir, with fully 3 out of every 4 dark elves, perhaps more, who had come in support of the war, leaving for the deeper Underdark.
This should prove to be fun, Ravel said dryly.
He is an orc, Sarabel put in. Easily distracted, easily pleased.
You intend to sleep with him? Tiago asked, drawing a scowl from Sarabel.
She turned to her brother instead and asked,
Well?
Tiago too turned to Ravel, but his expression was one of honest curiosity.
Lorgru didn't have the time to gather them,
Ravel answered his sister.
So you have them?
They are in the crypt in Dark Arrow Keep.
Then go and get them, Sarabel demanded.
Ravel heaved a sigh and looked over at Tiago with great lament.
The sword and armor of the first King Obuld, he explained. Gifts for Warlord Hartusk.
Where did you get such an idea? Tiago demanded, and Ravel held his hand out to Sarabel. Tiago's incredulous gaze fell over her.
While you plot and connive for the lust of the rogue Doerden and the sake of your own glory, I am thinking of the wider view, husband, she said.
Hartusk usurped Lorgru, Tiago reminded. You are likely to incite a civil war among the orcs.
But Sarabel was merely shaking her head.
Putting that fiery greatsword in the hands of Warlord Hartusk will remind all of the time of Obuld, she said. And so we begin again the whispers that this was all ordained, a plot by Loth and Gromph, executed by King Obuld I, and a drow spy named Driz Doerden to secure a foothold in the Silver Marches for just this day. It was Tosin Armgo's idea. He remembers well the days of the first King Obuld.
Tiago stared at her for some time, impressed and a bit afraid. In the end, he could only mutter once more, "Where are the damned dragons?"
"Regis heard Duke Tiago with his own ears,"
Knight Commander Alina Brightlance reminded the sitting Lord of Silvery Moon. Beside her, Regis shifted nervously from foot to foot, very aware of the withering gaze of the great Tairn Hornblade, the battle mage they called Thunderspell.
"You ask me to weaken my garrison with the hordes of orcs and giants encamped around Silvery Moon on the word of a halfling I barely know?"
Lord Hornblade replied.
"A halfling you hardly know."
"So once more you doubt my story?"
Regis asked.
"And the tale of Wulfgar? I thought we had settled this, Lord Hornblade. Have not your priests—"
He paused when Hornblade held up his hands in defeat.
"Yes, yes," he said. "You are Regis of Icewind Dale, once steward of Mithril Hall. Your claim has been verified."
"But you just said—"
"And friend to Drizzt O'Erden," Hornblade went on. "Drizzt O'Erden of House O'Erden of Menzo Berenzon, who have come to the surface to prod forth the legions of many arrows, to bring misery to my door."
"You cannot believe that,"
Regis quietly mouthed.
"Duke Tiago D'Erden of Nesme has executed hundreds," Lord Hornblade said. "He led the fight that killed King Brom of Citadel Adbar. He cut off the head of King Firehelm in Sundabar and flew about the city on his pet dragon with the trophy. Alina saw it herself. Did you not, Knight Commander?"
"I saw Tiago,"
Alina carefully answered.
"Tiago D'Erden," said Hornblade.
"Tiago Beanry,"
Regis corrected.
"Of House Beanry, first house of Menzo Berenzon."
"He calls himself D'Erden."
"I do not know why,"
Regis admitted.
"But whatever it may be, Drizzt is not a part of it. Wulfgar and I were separated from him and King Brunner in the upper tunnels of the Underdark, trying to get to Mithril Hall. Drizzt has nothing to do with the aggression of Many Arrows, Lord Hornblade, unless it is to put an end to that aggression by the blade."
"Was it a D'Erden felled by Wulfgar's throw of Aegis Fang when my troop made our last run to Silvery Moon?"
Alina added.
"For that drow was surely killed by the blow."
Lord Hornblade's expression and uplifted hands bade them both to relent.
"If you are wrong about this, Silvery Moon will be in desperate straits," Hornblade said.
"We are not asking for a large force," Alina said, "and we will need only enough wizards to keep us from the searching eyes of the orcs."
"And the drow and the dragons," Hornblade corrected. "You will need powerful magic to deceive the eye of a dragon."
Alina bowed her head, conceding the point.
"They are rallying their forces at Sundabar, determined to sweep southeast of Silvery Moon and strike at Everlund," Hornblade said quietly,
repeating the report Alina had delivered. He rubbed his hand deliberately over his cheeks and beard, staring hard at the duo.
"It is a wise move for them," he decided. "Everlund will be no easy battle, surely, but the city has not the magical firepower Silvery Moon can deliver, and it is that magic that keeps the dragons warily high when they pass over our walls."
"It is a fool's errand,"
Regis argued. Alina gasped, and Hornblade arched one eyebrow.
"They stretch their line past powerful enemies. This is our opportunity. Give us resources, I beg, Lord Hornblade. We will peck at their lines and cripple them before they can begin their march. We will choose the battles and the fields upon which they are fought, and so the orcs will lose and lose again. And should they choose to come against you, it will be with a depleted and dispirited force."
"Well argued, I admit,"
Hornblade said. He looked to Alina.
"And you are determined to lead this force? I had hoped to promote you to the leadership of the Knights in Silver and the defense of the city. And now you tell me that you will not even remain in Silvery Moon."
The woman could not suppress her obvious intrigue at the intriguing prospect the Lord of Silvery Moon had just dangled in front of her. But she shook her head.
It is a good plan, she decided. Our enemies cannot overrun Silvery Moon, nor can they get into the dwarven citadels. Their thirst for blood has driven them to Air. This beast, Hardtusk, needs a conquest, but his lust exposes his flanks. I will be the tip of the sword that stabs relentlessly into those flanks.
A cavalry group, said Lord Hornblade. 50 riders, including the 3 illusionists you'll need to keep you safely hidden. A pair of skilled battle mages and 4 priests specializing in the healing arts.
50 warriors plus the 9, Alina bargained. Plus the 10, I say, adding a 3rd battle mage. And an extra horse, a large one, and as fine a pony as can be found.
Lord Hornblade stared at her and grinned. 48 warriors, counting yourself, plus the horse and pony for your new friends and...
The 10, Alina said, matching his grin.
And if I may,
Regis said after a long pause, and both looked to him with surprise.
Credits for me at the apothecary? I am an alchemist of no small skill, and carry all the tools necessary to ply my trade.
He tapped his magical pouch. Lord Hornblade could only chuckle.
Perhaps I should surrender and simply ride with you, he said.
And though it started as a joke, by the time he finished the sentence, he and Alina were looking into each other's eyes quite seriously.